An Osho Talk.
God is dead. Now Zen is the only living truth.
Number 3.
On one occasion, Sagan commented to Sakito, "Some say that an intelligence comes from the south of the Ling." Sakito said, "There is no such intelligence from anybody." Sagan said, "If not, whence are all those sutras of the Tripitaka?" Sakito said, "They all come out of here, and there is nothing wanting." On Sagan's death, Sakito went to Mount Nangaku. Finding a large flat rock, he built a hut, and from thenceforward came to be known as Stonehead, and later, when he was a master, as Stonehead Osho. Hearing of Sakito living on a rock, the master, Nangaku, sent a young monk to him, saying, "Go to the east and examine in detail the monk sitting on the stone head. If he is the monk who came the other day, address him. And if he replies, you recite to him the following song. You are sitting so proudly on the stone, it is better to come to me." The attendant monk went to Sakito and recited this song. Sakito replied, "Even if you cried tears of sorrow, I would never ever cross over the hills." The monk came back and made a report to Nangaku. Nangaku said, "This monk will surely make the mouth of the people tremble for generations."
Friends, few questions from the sannyasins. The first question: my deepest pain is that of being an outsider, that I don't belong here in this life, that I am essentially wrong, and death is just waiting to claim me unmercifully. That sentence of belonging here, of valuing myself and being valued by existence, and thus letting myself live and celebrate fully, eludes me. Is this feeling the result of God-oriented religions? The God-oriented religions are bound to create such a feeling. It is absolutely necessary, because they are giving you lies as consolation. As man has gone beyond his primitive states of consciousness, he is more intelligent today, and he can see the myth of God. He has lived with the lie as if it is the truth, and he was content. But now that he is intelligent, he can see the falsity of the whole religious lies, a great problem arises for him. God is dead. His consolation is destroyed. He feels utterly empty. No relationship with existence. God used to be the fulfillment of one's life, somebody who was caring, somebody who was forgiving, somebody who was compassionate. There being no God, suddenly you feel yourself an outsider to existence. But this is a good beginning. Don't take it wrongly. Every lie taken away will leave for some time a space empty. You can use this empty space to become miserable. Misery will fill it. You can make this space anguish, anxiety, suffering, pain, but it is up to you. You can make this empty space a new beginning, a new door. God is dead. Now you have to search truth on your own. Nobody can give it to you. This emptiness should become a door going inwards. The moment you enter to the center of your being, you are no more an outsider. For the first time, you are the insider. God was keeping you outside the truth, outside existence. God was keeping you simply consoled. But consolations are of no help. You need a transformation of being. You need to use your emptiness joyfully because it opens a door unto the eternal space. It opens a door into your very roots which are in existence. It suddenly makes you feel at home with the trees, with the birds, with human beings, with the stars, with everything around you. The whole cosmos is your very home. So it all depends how you use your emptiness. The so-called Western existentialists are using it wrongly. They are filling it with misery, anxiety, tension, dread, anguish, angst. First you were full of lies, fictions, at least they were consoling. At least they were giving you some hope, some connectedness with existence. But existentialism is using your emptiness even in a worse way than the religions have used it. They have used it to exploit you, because certainly they were giving you consolation. And there is a price to everything. So they were exploiting you, but you were feeling perfectly happy for centuries. Because God was in heaven and everything was all right. He will take care of you. For this consolation, which was false, it was not going to change you, it was not going to make you a Buddha, it was not going to make you awakened, enlightened, it was not in favor of your spiritual growth, but at least it was keeping you without anxiety, without anguish, without meaninglessness. You were feeling at home. That feeling was a dream. Now that dream is destroyed, suddenly you will feel you are alone. There is no God, and you don't know any other way how to relate with existence. Your old programming has failed. You need a new insight. You need, instead of prayer, meditation. Instead of God, your own consciousness. A pillar of consciousness is going to fill your being. And this will be not a consolation. It will be authentic contentment. It will relate you with existence, you will not feel at all the outsider. Do you think I feel at all the outsider? I am as deeply involved with existence as one can be. The whole existence has become my very being. My heart is dancing with the heartbeat of the universe. God was preventing this happening, this tremendous phenomenon of transformation. God was not a friend to you, God was the greatest enemy, and the priests have been exploiting you. Now that intelligence understands it, there is no God, there is bound to be a small gap in which you have to choose. The Western existentialism, which is not authentic, it is accidentalism, or you have to look inwards. The same way as every awakened being has looked. And you have to stop looking towards the sky, you have to close your eyes and look towards the inner space from where you are connected with the existence. Immediately the emptiness will disappear. Not only emptiness, you will disappear. And then remains only a dance, a celebration of this whole universe, and you are absolutely one with it. There is no question of even being an insider. There arises a great oneness. You suddenly see yourself in various manifestations, in the trees, in the flowers, in the clouds, in the stars, you are everywhere. The moment you disappear, you are the whole existence, blossoming, flying, all the greenness, all the mountains, all the snow, all the rivers, all the oceans, everywhere you are spread. And this state is the state of a Buddha. This is true liberation. So you are feeling yourself an outsider. This is good. This is the transmittery period. Now you have to be alert not to fill yourself with pain and misery because God is no more there who is going to console you. You don't need any consolation. Humanity has come of age. Be a man, be a woman, and stand on your own feet. You have been for a millennia crippled because of God, because of the whole priesthood. They never wanted you to be healthy and whole. Their whole profession was dependent on your misery, pain. They were the people who were covering your misery and pain and giving you hope. And hope is an empty word. Karl Marx is right when he says religion is the hope of the hopeless. But the hope was just like a carrot hanging in front of you. You never reach it. But it is so close, it feels you are going to reach, if not today, then tomorrow. If not tomorrow, then day after tomorrow. The carrot is always hanging in front of you. A Sufi story says, a man has purchased a cow, and he was not accustomed how to deal with the cow. So he was trying to drag the cow, holding the cow's horns, and the cow was very resistant. Obviously, this man was new. She wanted to go to her home. She wanted to go to her old owner. A Sufi mystic saw. He said to the man, "It seems you are very new. You don't know how to deal with cows. This is not the right way." The man said, "What should I do? Because I am not that strong. The cow is more strong. She is dragging me with herself." The mystic gave him beautiful green grass and told him, "Leave her horns. You take this grass and you just move ahead of her. Keep the grass very close, but don't allow her to eat it. As she moves towards the grass, you go on moving towards your home." And it worked. The cow came, because the grass was so close and so green and so fresh, she forgot all about the owner. The immediate problem was how to get this grass, and it is so close, just hanging in front of your eyes. But the man went on moving slowly. The distance between the cow and the grass remained the same. And she entered into the house of the new owner, and he closed the door. Religions have been hanging carrots in front of you. They are never fulfilled. Those hopes are hopeless. Those promises are empty. When I destroy your hopes and your expectations and your ideas of God and your relationship with the world, naturally there is bound to be a small gap before you choose the right path. and the right path is not existentialism of the West. The right path is the meditation that East has been using for centuries and has worked it out completely into a science. You move inwards. God was preventing because he was outside. Your prayer was towards the God who was not there. You are here. There is no need of any evidence that you are here. There is no need for any argument to prove that you are here. So why not explore this here-ness, this presence that you are, this consciousness that you are? Why not explore it? Because those who have explored have never come back saying that they are outsiders. They have not even said that they are insiders, because even an insider is separate. They have come out and declared, Aham Brahmasmi, I am the whole, Anal Haq, I am the truth, I am existence itself. There is no question of outsider or insider. Those are the two sides of the same coin. The whole coin is dropped. Suddenly you find yourself one with the cosmic dance. A tremendous rhythm. In which you disappear as a separate personality. You become one with the whole. Every wave in the ocean for a moment thinks it is outsider. It does not belong to the ocean. But the next moment it disappears into the ocean. You will disappear in the ocean of consciousness the same way. You are just a wave. It does not matter that you exist for 70 years. Perhaps you have become frozen. All that is needed is melting. Every day I am saying melt, melt, melt like ice melting. And become one with the ocean that surrounds you. You are living in the very ocean. I have told you about a young fish, very revolutionary. And she started asking every other fish, where is the ocean? I have been hearing so much about it. No fish could answer. They said, you should have to find some wise fish, some enlightened fish maybe. But we don't know where this ocean is. We have also heard about it. And we believe it must be somewhere when everybody says, and for centuries our forefathers have been saying the ocean is. So we believe in it. Then an old mystic fish got hold of the young fish and told, you idiot, you are in the ocean, you are the ocean. You are born of the ocean and you will disappear in the ocean and you will live in the ocean. You are just a little more solid wave, but you will disappear in the ocean. This is the ocean. in which you are living. Around you there is, just like air, the cosmic consciousness. You can't see it, but it is continuously nourishing you. Your consciousness is nourished by the cosmic consciousness, just as your heart is beating because of the breathing. The air that you cannot see is continuously giving you oxygen, keeping your body alive. But you are not only body. Behind the body is your hidden splendor, the consciousness. That too needs nourishment continuously, and all around you, just like air. Once you are empty, just wait a little, don't take any decision, and suddenly you will feel a new rush of energy coming into you. From inside, from outside, you will suddenly feel you are surrounded with consciousness and you are melting into it. And then comes the realization that I was just ignorant about myself and the existence in which I am living, which has given me birth and which is going to be my ultimate home. I have to disperse in this home. But it always happens that there is a small period when you are very sick. The night I was talking to you about Gurdjieff and his method of working on energy system, and he divided energy as the first layer is very small layer. It is enough for day-to-day affairs. The second layer is a bigger layer. If the first layer is finished and you continue, the second layer is going suddenly to start functioning. And if you continue to exhaust the second layer, which is very difficult, it takes months, sometimes years to exhaust it. Then the third layer, which is cosmic, inexhaustible, it starts functioning. But Gurdjieff's method is very old, very primitive. But a coincidence happened. A.V. was shopping in Singapore that night, and she was feeling tired, utterly tired. And a moment came, she felt that she cannot go on more. But she wanted to finish and come back soon. So she went on and on and on. She has come with 18 suitcases filled with shopping. She is the great shopper here, and she shops for me. So she went on and on, then she suddenly felt a tremendous new energy arising in her that she had never known before. And she was as fresh as the morning dew. When she came here and she related it to Kavisha, she said, this is a strange coincidence, because that night I was discussing about these three layers of energy. The energy of the cosmos is surrounding you. All that is needed is a certain emptiness in you. So the emptiness is good. Don't fill it by beliefs. Don't fill it again by another kind of God, another philosophy, some existentialism. Don't fill it. Leave it. clean and fresh and go deeper, soon you will find from both the sides, from outside and inside, a tremendous rush of energy, a tremendous rush of consciousness. And you disappear, almost you are flooded with the cosmos. You are so small, and the cosmos is so vast. You suddenly disappear into it. And that disappearance is the ultimate experience of enlightenment. Then you know, neither you were outsider, nor you were insider, you are one with existence. Other than oneness with existence, nothing is going to help you. But that oneness is so easy, so obvious. Just a little relaxation, just a little turning in. Not much effort, not much discipline, not much torture for yourself. It is good that you are feeling an outsider, because God is no more filling the space, and you are feeling disconnected with the universe. It is good. It means only false connections have been removed. It happened one day, Mulla Nasruddin was sitting in his office, waiting for some customers. One man came in, and Mulla Nasruddin started talking to him about the things he was selling, and in the middle, and that he did not give the chance to the man to say anything. He just waved his hand, "Sit down," and he took the telephone and started talking about millions. "Yes, take it, $1 million, that's okay." At that moment, the man could not resist temptation. He said, "Wait a minute. I have come from the telephone company to connect the telephone." The telephone was not connected. This was just so business. That $1 million purchase. You are feeling disconnected because your connections were false. In fact, there were no connections. And you were talking to God on the phone, direct line. I have suddenly made you aware that your telephone is not connected. To whom you are talking? All your prayers are before a telephone that is not connected. The only way to be connected with existence is to go inwards. Because there, at the center, you are still connected. You have been disconnected physically from your mother. That disconnection was absolutely necessary to make you an individual in your own right. But you are not disconnected with the universe. Your connection with the universe is of consciousness, so you cannot see it. You have to go deep down with great awareness, watchfulness, witnessing, and you will find the connection. The Buddha is the connection. The second question is, monotheism a necessary step in human evolution, or is it just an invention of the priests? Monotheism is a far more dangerous device of the priests than polytheism. In a monotheistic religion, there is no possibility for a Buddha to be born. It is not part of evolution, it is part of preventing your evolution. All the religions born out of India, Judaism, Christianity, Mohammedanism, are monotheistic. Muhammad gives it perfect definition. One God, one Prophet, one Holy Quran. This is a very dictatorial type of religion, naturally dangerous, because it is very intolerant. The Jewish God himself says, I am a very intolerant God. I am very jealous. I will not allow you to worship any other God. Monotheism is a far more efficient way of exploiting people. Hinduism is polytheism. It has as many gods as you can think. When Hinduism came into existence, there used to be 33 million people in India. Hinduism has exactly 33 million gods. This seems to be far more democratic. Everybody has a god of his own. Rather than worshipping somebody else's god, it is far better to have your own private god. And there is no conflict. No Hindu scripture says, one God, one scripture, one prophet. All Hindu scriptures say, there are as many gods as there are people. That's why Hinduism is very inefficient. It has to be. It is not an army. It does not have a pope. It does not have any organized central body. It is a very disorganized chaos. So there is every freedom for everybody. Somebody becomes a Mahavira, Hinduism has no objection. Somebody becomes a Buddha, Hinduism has no objection. Both were born Hindus. Both went against Hindus. There is no problem. Because there is no central body to appoint a court of a grand jury to judge whether Mahavira is authentic, because he does not believe in God. His whole effort is that you should develop your consciousness to the ultimate peak. Everybody is a god. Mahavira's interpretation of 33 million gods was that because there are 33 million people, they all are going to become one day, when they evolve to the highest peak, They are all going to become gods. It is a probability. There are not yet 33 million gods, but 33 million potential gods. That gives a great freedom, and there is no need of any priest. You have your private god in a direct line. But in a monotheistic religion, Christianity will not allow any Buddha. Hence it has remained poor in consciousness. Its religion looks very primitive, is based on fictions. Nothing has been contributed by monotheistic religions to the world except war. Because the Mohammedan God cannot tolerate the Jewish God. Neither it can tolerate the Christian God, nor it can tolerate the Hindu gods. It has to kill all those gods and the believers of those gods. Only one God. So when Mohammedans came to India, they destroyed millions of beautiful temples, which were made in centuries by great sculptures. They destroyed millions of statues, beautiful statues of Buddha, Mahavira, other Jaina Tirthankaras. Whatever is left is a very small amount. Perhaps some temple was left because it was hidden deep in the forest. In every village you will find that when Mohammedans came, people just threw their gods, beautiful statues, in the wells, just to protect from Mohammedans, otherwise they will destroy the statue. So in every village, it happens often, you will find in summer time when the water goes down, suddenly a Buddha arising. And people pull the Buddha out, he has been for centuries lying in the well. But it has been protected. People have forgotten because those who have thrown have died centuries before. Mohammedans came 2000 years before. And they destroyed everything. They could not tolerate, their God was intolerant. How they can be tolerant? Monotheism is the most ugly religion in the world. Because it is intolerant. Intolerance creates violence. Christians have crusades. Mohammedans have jihads, religious wars. India has never known any religious war. It is everybody's choice to have a god or not to have a god. Even the atheists were not burned. A great philosophy of Charvakas flourished for centuries. And Charvakas believe there is no God, there is no soul. What Marx said after 5000 years, that the soul is just a byproduct of 5 elements that constitute the body. The founder of the Charvaka religion, Acharya Brihaspati, and this is strange that Acharya Brihaspati is mentioned in the Vedas with great respect. This is intolerance. It is your choice. You are free to choose. your path. You are free to choose, even if you want a religion which has no God, a religion even which has no soul. Charvakas were the perfect atheists. Their whole philosophy was eat, drink and be merry. Because there is no hell, no heaven, no God, and don't be worried, because there is no judgment day and there is nobody to judge. So sinners and saints all disappear into five elements. You know, in India, you must have seen people chewing pan. Brihaspati has used the symbol of pan, because the palm leaf, if you chew it, will not make your lips red. And all the things that are put in the palm, you chew separately and your lips will not be red. But you put them together and your lips become red. The redness of your lips is a byproduct of five elements making the pan. It is not an independent thing, it is just a combination of five elements together. Separately, your lips will not be red. This was a simple example by Charvaka. But even they were respected. Even the Vedas mention Brihaspati as a great master, Acharya. Such tolerance is possible only in a polytheistic religion. When there are so many gods, you have a variety of choice. You have certain freedom. When there is one God, you don't have any freedom. So according to me, monotheism is far worse than polytheism. Polytheism allowed the Buddhas, the Tirthankaras, the Charvakas, without any problem. Although they were against Hinduism, still nobody was crucified. Even Brihaspati was not crucified, but is mentioned with great respect in the Vedas. He has the freedom to think, to say, to create a philosophy of his own . Basically the name was not Charva, it was Charuvak. There is a great difference. Charuvak means sweet words. The philosophy of Brihaspati was of sweet words. He was taking all fear. There is no God, no heaven, no hell. He was taking all kinds of dread. Death is the end, birth is the beginning. In the middle is a small life. Enjoy it. And enjoy it. Even if you have to borrow money, don't be worried. Because after death, nobody is going to ask you to give my money back. His sentence is Rinam Kritva Ghritam Pivet. Even if by borrowed money, don't be worried. Borrow money, drink ghee. ghee is the refined most part of milk. When butter is refined, it becomes ghee. You cannot go beyond ghee. That is the last thing. And you cannot go backwards either, neither forwards nor backwards. You have come to the full point. So significantly he is saying that this life is the full point. You are not going anywhere. Just enjoy it. It does not matter what means you employ. What matters is your enjoyment. And life is so sad. Don't waste it into unnecessary fears that you will suffer in hell. Don't waste it into unnecessary greed that you will be rewarded into heaven. Don't bother about right and wrong. The only thing right is enjoy. Even this man is respected. But slowly, slowly the word charuvak became in the masses' mind charvak. Charvak means one who goes on eating continuously, just chewing like a buffalo, 24 hours like monkeys. Because that was actually his teaching, eat, drink, be merry. Neither Gautam Buddha was crucified. Although he declared that all the Vedas are false, he declared the whole Brahmanism, the priesthood of Hindus has been exploiting people. He declared that the Hindu caste system is wrong. Every man is born equal. But he was not crucified. Even Hindu philosophers used to go and listen to him. In fact, all his disciples were basically Hindu. From where he could have found disciples, thousands of disciples. And great Hindu scholars came to debate with him and became his disciples, finding that they have only words this man has experienced. Such a tremendous urge to find the truth, it does not matter from whom it comes. The monotheistic religions, Christianity, Judaism, Mohammedanism, have been the most dangerous religions in the world. Buddhism has not killed a single person in 25 centuries. It has never attacked anybody. And it spread all over Asia, converted the whole Asia, just by a simple experience. It was difficult to confront a Bodhidharma. Even the Emperor Wu of China could not manage to stand straight in front of Bodhidharma. And Bodhidharma called him, "You are an idiot." To call the Emperor of China an idiot, because he was asking that I have been putting my whole energy and my whole power and my whole treasure at the disposal of the Buddhist monks. Thousands of monks are here translating scriptures of Buddha into Chinese. And they are all my guests. I have opened many monasteries. I have made many temples for Buddha. What is going to be my reward? Just the word reward was enough, and Bodhidharma said, "You are an idiot." If you have been doing all this for a reward, you will fall into the deepest hell. The emperor was shocked. But Bodhidharma said, the very idea of reward is nothing but greed. You are more greedy than ordinary greedy people. Those who are collecting money know perfectly well when they die, their bank balance is not going with them, not their money is going with them. But you are greedy, so greedy that you are trying to make a bank balance in the other world, of which you know nothing. Obviously, you are an idiot. And I am not going to enter into your empire. I had come with the idea, but when the emperor is an idiot, that is enough proof what kind of people you must be having. He refused to enter. He remained outside the boundary of China in a small temple. And Emperor Wu, before he was dying, said to his people, his prime minister, that write on my grave that I am really an idiot. I could not understand the great Buddha who has come in the form of Bodhidharma. He was right. I have lived a wrong life of greed and fear. Buddha's word is spread all over Asia, from Sri Lanka to Korea. There was no clash, there was no fight. At the most, there was beautiful discussions. Very nice, civilized, cultured. Sword cannot prove that you are right. Neither crucifixion can prove that Jesus is wrong. I always think that Judaism had such great rabbis, scholars. Could not they convince Jesus, a young man, only 33 years of age? But the problem is, they were only scholars. There was not a single man who really knew the truth. And because this man was claiming something which they cannot argue against, because there is no way to argue against, he is saying, I am the prophet you have been waiting for. And they certainly have been waiting, they are still waiting. They will wait forever. It is waiting for Godot. When for the first time the book came to me, waiting for Godot, I thought this Godot seems to be a parody on the word God. My ancient most German sannyasin Haridas was there, so I asked Haridas, do you think Godot is German for God? He said, no. German for God is Gott. That's great. Already Gott. There is no need to wait. I said, that's perfect. When you have got it, what is the point of waiting? I love the idea. God is so far away. God simply is appealing. You are asking about monotheism. Is it a necessary step? No, not at all. It is an absolutely unnecessary step. And not only unnecessary, but dangerous. It has created only violence, murder. Living people have been burnt in the name of monotheistic God, one God. Will not allow you to believe in another God. Polytheism is also an invention of priests, but far more liberal. Monotheism is also an invention of the priest, but far more dictatorial. It gives you commandments as if you are an army and you need commandments. Buddha does not have any commandments, neither Mahavira. They persuade you. They don't command. They don't humiliate you. They respect you. They know your hidden potential is the same as they are. Gautam Buddha relates about his past life. He heard that one man has become enlightened. He was not very much interested, but just out of curiosity, the man has come to the town where he lived. He was very young. And he was not interested at all in enlightenment or spirituality, but out of curiosity what this enlightenment is, let us see. He went to see the man. He had no desire to bow down to him, but when he saw the man, he was so luminous, such a grace, such a tremendous presence, that in spite of himself he touched his feet. He became aware when he was touching his feet, what I am doing. I had come just to be an spectator. When you really face a man who knows, a gratitude arises spontaneously. It is not an effort. It was not an effort at all. He has not even come with the mind to touch his feet. He has come just to be an spectator. But seeing him was enough. He forgot himself. This man's presence was so overwhelming and such beauty. His eyes so deep like a lake, so clean, so clear. He fell into love with that man. Immediately he touched his feet. He thought while touching his feet, what I am doing. It has happened on its own. But a more miracle, a bigger miracle was awaiting him. As he stood up, the man who had become enlightened bowed down and touched this young man's feet. He said, what are you doing? You are. A great awakened one. It is absolutely right for me to touch your feet, although I had not come with the desire. but it was spontaneous. You touched my heart. But why you are touching my feet? Because I am nobody. I don't know even ABC of enlightenment. That man said, this life you don't know. There was a time I was also just like you. I had no idea who I am. Now I know. I have come to my flowering. And I know you will come to your flowering. Don't forget. I have touched your feet so that you remember when you become a Buddha. Don't forget that everybody is a Buddha. Somebody has blossomed, somebody is waiting for the right season. And everybody's spring comes in its own time. And Buddha reminded again and again to his disciples that never think for a single moment that you are inferior than me. We are all equal. The only difference, very slight difference, which does not mean much, is you are asleep, I am awake. But I was asleep, and you will be awake. So what is the difference? The difference is only of timing. In the morning I wake up, in the evening you wake up. Just 12 hours difference. That does not create any superiority or inferiority. Everybody has to walk according to his pace. Some people run, some people are really fast runners, some people go slowly, some people take many stops on the way and have a little rest and a cup of tea. Maybe an afternoon snap. But everybody is on the way. Somebody is a little back, somebody is a little forward. But that does not create any question of inferiority or superiority. Buddhism has no priests. Jainism has no priests. Because they don't have God. If you don't have God, you can't have priests. Priests are the representative of the fictitious God. They are the agents between you and God. And priests certainly would like a monotheism than polytheism. Hindu priests are trying hard to create Hinduism also a monotheistic religion, but they fail. There are 8 Sankaracharyas. The original Sankaracharya, Adi Sankaracharya, has appointed 4 Sankaracharyas. He was the first man to make some effort of organizing Hinduism. Before him there was no leader at all. It was just absolute freedom. He tried the first effort to organize Hinduism. He appointed 4 Sankaracharyas for 4 directions. So they will rule over one direction. But after his death, 4 new Sankaracharyas popped up, because there are 8 directions, not 4. So four people popped up on their own. Now there are 8 Shankaracharyas. And I was talking to one Shankaracharya. That you should have 2 more. He said, what? I said, there are 10 directions. 8 you have, 1 upwards, 1 downwards. He said, that's a great idea. Can afford 2 more? But all these Shankaracharyas have no central body. And they cannot have, because somebody is a worshipper of Shiva, somebody is a worshipper of Vishnu, somebody is a worshipper of Krishna, somebody is a worshipper of Brahma, and there are hundreds of smaller gods. And people worship them. People worship trees, people worship just stones. Put a red color on any stone and just wait by the side. You will find soon some Hindu coming there, bowing down. When for the first time the British government made roads and the milestones, the milestones they painted red because red can be seen from far away. No other color is so sharp and cannot be seen from far away. So they painted the stones red and they were very much concerned. Hindus, villagers will come and put their flowers and coconuts and worship. And they said to them that these are milestones. And the villager said, it does not matter. Any red stone represents God. So you will see, trees are being worshipped, stones are being worshipped. It is a complete freedom to worship. It is far better than monotheism, but I don't support it. It may be better than monotheism, but it is still poison, a little dilute. It will kill you slowly, but it will kill you certainly. Every religion is destructive of your evolution of consciousness. Monotheism is the most dangerous. But religion as such is dangerous. If you can avoid religion, you can become religious. If you can avoid religion, you can have a direct contact with existence in cosmos. The third question, is it difficult for people to drop God because He is their only hope and they focus all their expectations on Him? It seems to be very hard to drop an expectation even when one can see it as such and can guess that most likely it will end up in disappointment. It is true. It is very difficult to drop an expectation, to drop a hope, because you don't have anything real in your life. You are living only in the hope that tomorrow will be better. You are only living with the expectation that after death you will enjoy the pleasures of paradise eternally. Hence it is difficult to drop the idea of God. But it is God who is preventing you from all the joys and blissfulness and ecstasy right now. And you are missing the present in the hope of the future, and future is not certain. Tomorrow never comes. Have you ever seen tomorrow coming? God is just like tomorrow, always hanging around. Just it seems it is coming, but what comes is today. Tomorrow never comes. All those hopes never come true. All those expectations finally become frustrations. Why do you see rich people frustrated than the poor? Just go in the interior parts of India where real poverty exists, and you will not find anybody disappointed. They are hoping for God, and they think their poverty is a fire test, and only the poor will enter into the kingdom of God. That's why Christianity has such great appeal to the poor people of the world. It gives great consolation. It gives you expectation. That helps you to tolerate the present misery, the pain, the present poverty, slavery. Your eyes are focused on the future, and the present goes on passing in misery. But your eyes are no more focused on it. So it helps to keep you alive, but just alive. Just like vegetables. It keeps you vegetative. A life that cannot dance is not life. It is living at the minimum survival level. A life that cannot sing the song of love and joy is not life. So your expectations and your hopes may make it difficult to draw God, but you have to gather courage and understanding that your hopes and expectations are destroying your whole life. And God is just a fiction. It is not going to fulfill anything. God is nowhere. You are. God is not. Existence is. God is not. So look in the isness of things. Look into this moment, now and here, into yourself. That is the closest door to the cosmos. It opens in your very center, and all your expectations will look so poor, and all your hopes will look so ugly when you come to know your tremendous splendor, your godliness, when you will realize your freedom, and when you will realize that the whole cosmos is related to you, deeply related to you, and you are just a great aspiration of the cosmos to reach to the highest point of consciousness. I have told you, Vincent van Gogh used to paint his trees. Nobody liked his paintings because they were very absurd. His trees were going beyond the stars. And when asked that, where have you seen these trees? He said, I have never seen these trees, just I have heard a whisper. I was lying in the shade of a tree and I just heard the whisper, the earth was saying to the tree that you are my ambitions. You are my ambitions to reach the stars. Since that moment, I have started painting my trees going beyond the stars. He is really a genius. Certainly trees are ambitions of the earth. And what is man's consciousness? The ambition of the whole existence to reach to the highest peak, become a Gautam Buddha. In your becoming a Gautam Buddha, the whole existence rejoices. You have fulfilled the expectation of existence. You don't need to expect anything. You are yourself an expectation of existence. You fulfill it. And you can fulfill it because existence had given you all opportunity and all potential to fulfill it. Everything is there. Just you have to put everything in the right place and suddenly you will see. Life is a sheer dance of ecstasy. From birth to death, from death to birth, these are small episodes, birth and death in the eternal flow of life. But unless you drop God, you are going to remain miserable, and misery needs some support from hope, expectation, tomorrows. But this is not living. Living in the tomorrow, do you think, can be called living? Life knows only one moment, and that is the present. Life knows only one space, and that is here. Now and here, these two words are the most significant words in human language. They represent reality. Friedrich Nietzsche suggests that the hope of happiness is the instrument by which man is manipulated. More than any actual instance of happiness. Do you remember any moment of real happiness in your past life? Just go backwards towards your childhood. When you were a child, you thought you will be happy when you are young. Every child wants to be young quickly. I used to live in a house, and just after 8 or 10 houses, there was a post office. And in front of my house was the public park. So it was very quiet and silent place. And I used to go for a walk early in the morning, 3 o'clock. One day I saw near the post office a little boy with mustache. I could not believe. It was dark, but still it was full moon night. So I could see the mustache. And he was smoking a cigarette. I thought perhaps he is a pygmy, but Seeing me, the boy moved behind a big tree by the side of the road. So I went behind the tree. The boy said, "Don't tell my father." I said, "I'm not going to tell anybody. Who are you? I don't know your father." He said, "My father is the postmaster here. Just that is the post office." I said, "What you are doing? You have got a good mustache." He just pulled the mustache. He said, "It is not real, but my father has a real mustache. And I always want to grow quickly, but how to grow quickly? I even shave my mustache when my father is out, but does not grow anything. And he shaves twice a day. So I got this mustache from a shop which sells things for people who are playing a drama in a college gathering or somewhere else. So I got the mustache." And I said, "You are smoking a cigarette too?" He was hiding behind. He said, "My father always goes on smoking, and while he's smoking he looks really a man." So I thought, just to give a try, in that small boy I saw all the children of the world. Every child wants to grow fast, because what is childhood? Being ordered by the mother, by the father, being ordered by the teacher, beaten by the parents, beaten by the teacher. Every boy wants, every girl wants just quickly, just remember your own childhood. It is absolutely false, the people who say that my childhood was the most beautiful period of my life. If your childhood was the most beautiful period of your life, out of your childhood grows your youth. It should be more beautiful. Out of your youth grows old age. It should be the perfection. But that is not the case. When you are young, you start looking embarrassed. You are young, and where is the happiness? Perhaps it is hidden in a woman or hidden in a man. Find the soul match. Just today I have received information. In Europe there is now a great new age movement for finding the soul match. And in their pamphlet they mention my name, because once I have told you cannot find your soul match. It is a big world. And I don't think God creates soul mates. Our existence creates soul mates. Where you are going to find? People find just in their neighborhood or in their college. How existence is going to manage in the same college you and your soul mate? So that pamphlet condemns me that I'm not saying the right thing. Everybody has a soulmate. That is a good consolation. But just look those who have found their soulmate. Here is Zareen. She had found a soulmate. And since she has found the soulmate, I have never seen her as happy as she was before. and I know her soulmate. He keeps himself locked in his room because he wants, poor fellow, some time to herself. But Zarin is not going to let him be alone. You have to be careful when you have found your soulmate. So she goes on knocking on his door. She jumps balconies and reaches to poor fellow. And not to make a fuss, everybody will know he has to open the door. And then the meeting of the soulmate begins. And both are miserable since they have met. Ananda was telling me, because I was asking her why Zarin does not look so happy as she used to be. She said she has found a soulmate. I said, she should be more happy. If the soulmate is not right, you bring a group of sannyasins, put in a queue before Zarin, choose your soulmate, and you can change every day. What? Get bored with one. Just the same sari, the same sari. One gets bored, that is absolutely natural. All soulmates create boredom and nothing else. And here in this place, where freedom is absolutely total value, ultimate value, where change is accepted as life's way, why you should bother about one soulmate when there are so many soulmates available? Just go on changing and life will be joy, and Zarin will be again laughing and smiling. Because of this soulmate, she becomes hard and dictatorial on the gate. With whom to take the revenge? Because the soulmate always goes to Bombay. And I know why he goes to Bombay. Just to have a little freedom. Unnecessary misery. In youth, people start thinking perhaps in old age life will be peaceful. In old age, life becomes a constant anxiety. Death is coming by, closer and closer. So your whole life is wasted just looking ahead. I am reminded of a famous Greek astrologist. Even kings of different countries of Europe used to consult him about their fate. One night he was walking, looking at the stars. But when you look at the stars, you cannot look at the road. You cannot manage one eye looking up and one eye looking down. I don't think it is possible. They both go up, they both go down. So he fell in a well. And then he shouted, screamed, "Save me!" An old woman living by in her farm came. She was too old, but somehow she managed to pull him out with a rope. And the astronomer, that astrologer, said to her, that, "Do you know who I am? I am the royal astrologer. Almost all the kings of Europe and the queens come to me. All the richest people discuss me about their fate, about their future. And my fee is very much. But because you have saved me, you can come to me. I will tell about your future without any fee." The old woman laughed. She said, "You cannot see, even the well is ahead of you. Just feel ashamed. Those who have been coming to you must be fools. I am not going to come. You cannot see the well ahead. What can you see about my future?" Future is just your hope, expectation. And when this life does not fulfill, you start looking further, beyond death. All these are fictions just for you to survive somehow. But this survival is not you are supposed to be. Existence has not given you birth just to live in hopes. You can be really ecstatic this moment, and there is no other moment. Meditation is, Zen is, living now and here. The Sutra. On one occasion, Segen commented to Sekito, "Some say that an intelligence comes from the south of the Ling." Sekito said, "There is no such intelligence from anybody." This Ling was a great scholar, a very wise fellow. So Sekito simply mentioned to his master Segen that people say that an intelligence comes from the south of the Ling. Sekito said, "There is no such intelligence from anybody. Intelligence arises within you. It never comes from outside, from anybody, from any place. South or north or east or west, it has nothing to do with outside. It is your inner flowering." Segen said, "If not, whence are all those sutras of the Tripitaka? If you say that intelligence does not come from outside, then what about the sutras of Gautam Buddha called Tripitaka? Three treasures from where? What do you say about them?" Sekito said, They all come out of here. Remember this word here. We were just talking about the same thing. Sekito said, they all come out of here and there is nothing wanting. Once you are here, there is nothing unfulfilled in you. Everything becomes so fulfilled. Such a deep contentment that you don't need anything anymore. You have actualized your potential. Your flowers have opened their petals. The spring has come. It all comes from here. It all comes from now. Neither Buddha can give it to you nor anybody else. On Sagan's death, Sekito went to Mount Nangaku. Finding a large flat rock, he built a hut and from thenceforward came to be known as Stonehead, and later when he was a master as Stonehead Osho. This Mount Nangaku is the place where he had gone to see Master Nangaku. In Japan it has been a tradition. Whenever a master lives on a mountain, the emperor gives the name of the master to the mountain. So the mountain becomes his memorial. For centuries and centuries people will know that this Mount Nangaku once was the temple and the shelter of a great master Nangaku. He has gone to see Nangaku to deliver a message, a letter from Sagan. Perhaps at that time he must have looked on the beauty of the mountain where Nangaku used to live at the top. When Sagan died, Sekito went to Mount Nangaku. He must have looked while he was going there and coming back that the place was immensely beautiful. The man was not right for him. That does not mean that the man was wrong. It simply means they could not feel a certain harmony. He may be right for someone else, but he was not right for him. Or perhaps he was not right for him, it means the same thing. But it is not a condemnation of Master Nangaku. It simply says that two persons did not feel anything as a bridge. But he must have seen the mountain coming and going. It was a beautiful place. So he found a small place, a flat rock on Mount Nangaku. On the top was his monastery. He built a hut and from thenceforward came to be known as Stonehead because he was sitting always on the stone. And he used to have, as every Buddhist monk has to, shave his head. So his head looked almost like the rock he was sitting on. You know, our Sekito stone head. Just look at his head. I have called him Stone Head, the first Zen master of Germany. All that he needs is a rock. I will find a beautiful rock for him. so he can enjoy sitting on it. Once he founds the rock, you should have to address him as Stonehead Osho. Right now he is only called Master Stonehead Niskriya. Hearing of Sakito living on a rock, the master Nangaku sent a young monk to him saying, go to the east and examine in detail the monk sitting on the stone hedge. If he is the monk who came the other day, address him, and if he replies, you recite to him the following psalm. You are sitting so proudly on the stone, it is better to come to me. The attendant monk went to Sakito and recited this psalm. Sakito replied, even if you cried tears of sorrow, I would never ever cross over the hills. I am not going to come. He was absolutely certain that Nangaku was not the man to be his master. There was no feeling of synchronicity. He had not even delivered the letter of Segen. The monk came back and made a report to Nangaku. Nangaku said, this monk will surely make the mouth of the people tremble for generations. It is true. Just look at our Stonehead Osho. Even now, after centuries, he is making the people tremble. He used to have a girlfriend. She used to tremble. But since he became a Stonehead master, the girlfriend disappeared. Who can love a Stonehead? This is a great protection. Particularly in this place, where every woman is looking for a boyfriend, a Stonehead is absolutely unafraid. Anybody who wants to be unafraid, just become a Stonehead. Because no woman likes a Stonehead. Nangaku was right in his estimation. He has encountered this fellow when he has come to see him. And you remember what he said? Because Nangaku said, you should not be so arrogant in asking the question. You should be more moderate. You should be more humble. Sakito said to him, I would rather go into hellfire for eternity than to change my question. And the reason was that no question can be humble. Every question is deep down a doubt, and every question is an interference into the master's silence. It is arrogant. And he left immediately without delivering the letter. He has seen this man. So when he sent the messenger, he told him, take care, if this is the same fellow who had come the other day, recite this sutra. Tell him to come to me rather than sitting on that stone and report to me what he says. And what he said, I am not going to leave this place. Even if you come with tears in your eyes, Nangaku immediately must have remembered this is the same man who was ready to go to eternal hell but will not ask the question in a different way. That's why he made this comment, this monk will surely make the mouth of the people tremble for generations. And Sakito became a master of hundreds of people who became enlightened. But he was a very hard master. He was almost dangerous to the disciples. But all his hardship came from a very loving heart, of a very deep compassion. He wanted them to become enlightened. He did not allow them to escape. Once in a while, a disciple may escape and Sakito will follow him for miles and pull him back. Where are you going? Come back. And the disciple will say that, just forgive me, I am tired. Because he will beat the disciples. He will jump on the disciples. Once he threw a disciple from the window of a second-story building and jumped behind him on top. He had multiple fractures and he was sitting on his chest asking, got it? And the disciple really got it. He became enlightened. Who cares about multiple fractures? The real thing is enlightenment. At any cost, it has to happen. People have never come across a man like Sakito, whose compassion was so great. He was ready to do anything, even in his old age. He will hit so hard that his own hand will hurt. And disciples will say that you are getting old now, Master. You should not hit people so hard because they are young and you are old. You are becoming every day fragile. He said, I know my hand hurts the whole night. But I cannot see somebody groping in the darkness. If just one hit can make him awake, it does not matter if my hand hurts the whole night. Sooner or later these hands will disappear into the earth. But if these hands can help somebody to wake up, you think I am getting old, that is true. But as far as I am concerned, even when I am dead, if I see someone stumbling in the darkness, I will jump out of my grave and hit him as hard as I can do. This man was a rare master, apparently very hard, deep down, so soft, that he was ready to jump out of his grave. My feeling is, if he had done that, he had never done that. Just his skeleton would have made the person enlightened. There would not have been any need to hit. The person would have shouted immediately, "Got it! You just go down." Isa wrote, "Pulse of the dew, in every single one of them I see my home." These Zen poets have transcended all poetry of the world, because all poetry is mind fabrication. Only haikus are coming from no mind. Pulse of dew, in every single one of them I see my home. And when you can see in every dew your home, how can you feel outsider or insider? You simply become one with existence. This whole existence is so deeply one at the center. Only on the circumference we are different. You draw a big circle. On the circumference of the circle you can put points which are different. Then from every point draw a line towards the center. As those lines start coming closer to the center, you will find they are coming closer to each other also. And at the center, all the lines meet. So when I say go to your center, I am not only sending you to your center, it is the center of the whole existence. There we all meet. There it is only one oceanic consciousness. Manisa's question. Nietzsche's foreword to his book The Antichrist begins, "This book belongs to the very few. Perhaps none of them is even living yet. Possibly they are the readers who understand my Zarathustra. Only the day after tomorrow belongs to me. Only the day after tomorrow belongs to me. Some are born posthumously." To understand him, Nietzsche continues, "One must have new ears for new music. New eyes for the most distant things. Beloved Master, do you find in us the capacity for those new ears, those new eyes?" Manisa, everybody has the capacity. But the capacity has to be transformed into reality. It is only a potential. And I am working to give you that transformation where your potential ears become your reality, where your potential eyes become your reality. Perhaps Nietzsche is talking about you. This is the day after tomorrow. And your meditation will make your ears sensitive enough, your eyes clear enough. If you can understand me, there is no difficulty in understanding Friedrich Nietzsche. Because Nietzsche is only mind. I am no mind. If you can understand me, you have far better ears and far better eyes than Nietzsche was thinking about. your meditation is going to open all your sensitivity, your receptivity. Nisya will not be difficult for you to understand. Meditation will make you capable of understanding not only Nisya, but those great Buddhas who are not born yet. You will be able to understand all the Buddhas of the past, of the present, of the future, because their song is one, their music is one. It is the music that arises out of deep silence. This place is just a scientific lab to create the new man. In Friedrich Nietzsche's words, the superman. But I use the word new man because the superman gives a sense of superiority. Otherwise, the word is beautiful, but it can be misguiding. Hence, I call it the new man or the Buddha. Because the new man is going to be fully awakened. If a fully awakened man cannot understand Friedrich Nietzsche, who else can understand him? You are on the way to understand even deeper things and greater heights. It is time from these great heights to roll down laughing. It is time for Sardar Gurdyas Singh. When little Arnie gets into mischief, his mother tries to discipline him by saying, "God would not like that." And when Arnie gets really out of hand, his mother says, "God will be angry." But one evening at the dinner table, Arnie takes one look at the plate of prunes put in front of his eyes and says, "Yuck! I am not going to eat these wrinkled old black things." "Arnie," says his mother, "God would not like that." "I don't care," snaps Arnie. "I am not going to eat them." "Ernest," threatens his mother, "God would be angry." "Ah," shouts Arnie, "fuck God." At this, his mother sends him up to his bedroom. A few minutes later, a violent thunder storm blows up and shakes the roof and rattles the walls. Arnie's mother goes upstairs to remind him about God's anger. But to her surprise, she finds Arnie looking out of the window at the terrible storm. "You see, Arnie," exclaims his mother, "this is what happens when you make God angry." "Well," replies Arnie, "if you ask me, it is a lot of fuss to make over a plate of prunes." Captain Kopa of the LA police receives an order from the police commissioner to raid Madame Fifi's house of carnal delights in downtown Hollywood. But this order causes Kopa and his men some embarrassment because they are all frequent customers themselves and are friendly with Madame Fifi. So Captain Kopa calls the establishment on the phone to warn them, but finds that Madam Fifi and all the girls have gone out on a picnic. Only Mrs. Mopich, the cleaning lady, is there to answer the phone. "Listen," says Captain Copa, "pass this message on to Madam Fifi. Tonight we have to make a surprise raid on the place. But when we come, we will honk the horn loudly and drive around the block. We will do this 3 times and then we will come rushing in. By that time we want everybody safely out of the place. Do you understand?" "Yes, yes," replies Mrs. Mopich, and she puts down the phone. But when she has finished his work, she goes home and forgets to pass on the message. That night it is business as usual, and Madam Fifi's house of Carnal Delights is packed to capacity. At midnight exactly, Captain Copa and the boys arrive in their patrol cars. They all honk their horns and screech around the block. When they reappear, they honk their horns and go around again. They honk and circle the block once more and then screech to a halt outside and charge into the building. As they are racing up the stairs with the captain in the lead, they meet 2 naked girls coming down, holding a mattress between them. "What the hell is going on?" cries Captain Copa. "Where are you girls going?" "Don't blame us," shouts one of the girls. "Some idiot outside is honking for take-away service." Bishop Cretin has a small church on the Greek island of Crete. One of the rules of the Greek Orthodox Church is that he cannot hold a church service with less than 6 people present. Since Cretin only has 6 old ladies in his congregation, this rule is beginning to cause him some anxiety. Sure enough, one Sunday morning, only 5 old ladies show up. Old Mrs. Theocrepolis has dropped dead the night before while saying her prayers. So Bishop Creighton has an idea. "Perhaps we can get a passerby to join us," he announces, "to make up the 6th person. And then he sends off old Mrs. Souflaki to try and find somebody. "Remember, Mrs. Souflaki," shouts Bishop Cretin, "anyone will do, man or woman." Mrs. Souflaki snuffles down the street in her black dress, black shoes, and black head scarf, looking for a passing tourist. She runs right into Hermann, the German, who has just arrived for his summer holidays. "Hey, mister," croaks the old Greek lady, "how would you like to be the 6th man? "Mein Gott," cries Hermann, "I would not even want to be the 1st. be silent. Close your eyes and feel your body to be completely frozen. This is the right moment to turn inwards with your whole energy, with your total consciousness, rush towards the center with an urgency as if this is going to be your last moment on the earth. Without such an urgency, nobody has ever become awakened. Faster and faster, deeper and deeper, as you are coming closer to your center, a great silence descends over you. The whole night starts singing songs for you. A little more deeper. And you find flowers of peace, serenity, joy, ecstasy, blissfulness, all growing around you. Just one step more and you are at the very center of your being. Suddenly you see you are no more. Only your original face, without any mask, without any personality, is there. This is the face we have called in the East the face of the Buddha. This is everybody's original face. It is nobody's monopoly. The only quality the Buddha at the center of your being has is witnessing. Witnessing is the whole spirituality compressed into one word. Witness. You are not the body. Witness, you are not the mind. And witness, you are only a witness. Just a mirror reflecting without any judgment, without any appreciation, without any condemnation. A pure mirror, that's what the Buddha is. Silence becomes deeper, ecstasy becomes overwhelming, you are drunk with the divine. This center is the connection with the existence. From here your consciousness is being nourished continuously. This is your eternal life. Without beginning, without end. To make the witnessing more clear and more deeper. Nividhano, relax, let go completely. But remember one thing constantly, that you are a witness. This witness is the truth. This witness is the beauty. This witness is the good. This witness is the opening of all the mysteries of existence, the ultimate secret of all the miracles. At this impeccable silent moment, you are the most fortunate people on the earth. I can see your melting. The ice is melting into the ocean. You are disappearing. Gautam the Buddha auditorium has become an ocean. 10,000 Buddhas have disappeared into one oceanic consciousness. Collect as much experience of the center as possible. All the flowers of the beyond, the eternal peace, the ultimate joy. You have to bring all these qualities to your ordinary day-to-day life. The more your day-to-day life becomes graceful, beautiful, peaceful, silent, loving, compassionate, the Buddha will come closer to you. So remember to persuade the Buddha that you are getting ready. Only he is missing. He has to come following you just like a shadow. These are the 3 steps of enlightenment. First, Buddha comes behind you with all his warmth and grace and beauty and blissfulness and benediction, as is said. Soon, he takes over. You become the shadow in the second step. And in the second step, your shadow by and by starts withering away, because it has been only a shadow and nothing else. In the third step, you find you are the Buddha, and the person you used to be is no more to be found anywhere. That day will be the greatest day of celebration in your life. Not only in your life, but in the life of the whole existence. The whole existence will celebrate the trees, the stars, the moon, the oceans, the earth, everything around you will have a tremendous ceremony to welcome your coming home after a long wandering into different bodies, into different species. Finally, you have come home. Nivedana, come back. But come back with the same grace a Buddha comes, with the same silence, sit down for a few moments, reminding yourself the golden path you have traveled and the tremendous space you have been in, and feel the radiance and the coolness of a Buddha behind you. He is almost touching your body and your heart. He is so motherly. He is so feminine, so fragile. Just like a lotus leaf. Rejoice that you are those chosen few Friedrich Nietzsche speaks of. Soon you will start having a new sensitivity to your ears, and a new light will be sown into your eyes, and a new dance into your heart. The spring is coming soon. And you are all going to blossom into Buddhas. Less than that is not sufficient. You have to be a Buddha. Only that experience of the ultimate height and the ultimate depth will bring you home, the very source from where you have come is also the goal where you are going. And I am immensely happy with you. You are doing so well. With such honesty, that any master would have been proud of you. God is dead and Zen is the only living truth.
Thank you.
The responses to sutras and voice recording on this audio format are the copyright of Osho International Foundation. Copyright dates 1953 through 2003. All rights reserved. Reproduction in any media is prohibited.